It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Jason Snell, Andy Iannocco, Alex Lindsay are all in the house, and we're going to be talking about the Apple event. We may be just 2 weeks away. Also, Apple workers don't want to come back to work. Imagine Tim Cook, Johnny Ive, and Laureen Powell Jobs all on the same stage. It's going to happen. And why your iOS VPN just doesn't do the job. It's all coming up and a whole lot more this week on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 832, recorded Tuesday, August 23rd, 2022. A fine patina. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZocDoc. With ZocDoc, you can find the right doctor for you in your network and in your neighborhood. Go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak and download the ZocDoc app for free. Start your search for a top-rated doctor, many available within 24 hours. And by 8 Sleep. Good sleep is the ultimate game changer, and the pod is the ultimate sleep machine. Go to 8sleep.com/MacBreak to check out the pod and save $150 at checkout. 8 Sleep currently ships within the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and select countries in the EU and Australia. And by New Relic. Use the data platform made for the curious. Right now, you can get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data per month free forever. No credit card required. Sign up at newrelic.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And, of course, we're getting close. We're inching in. Hello, Jason Snell, sixcolors.com.
Hello.
Good to see you.
The silly season is just around the corner now, Leo.
It is. That's why Jason has a human-sized box, a stack of boxes to his to his right.
I thought we weren't going to talk about that.
Let's not talk about that. It's time to ship out the old and ship in the new. Andy Iannocco is also here. He is with WGBH in Boston. Well, you look very... Did you change cameras on us? You look sharp.
No. I'm in the kitchen, believe it or not, not in my office for various reasons.
So we have daylight now.
I've basically redone like my lighting, and finally, like maybe this is showing me. Maybe I should have rearranged them. Maybe I should have rearranged my lighting a while ago.
It looks good. But yeah. Is that a Red Sox red T-shirt?
Almost. I will give you a second guess, and I'm sure you'll guess correctly the second time.
Hang on. San Francisco 49ers? No,
you were
the Pawtucket. Let's see.
Paw Sox.
The Pawtucket Sox. I love the Paw Sox.
Worcester Paw Sox, yeah.
They moved to Worcester?
They moved to Worcester because Pawtucket would not build them like a brand new stadium. And so.
Are they the AA, AAA, single A?
AAA. Okay. Yeah, really a lot of great ball being played there. It was so cool being able to like Bull Durham my way into baseball games like six times a season.
So fun,
close by, always seats, and everyone wants to make it to the big. So nobody's being tentative about sliding catches.
But they still call them the Paw Sox, not the Woo Sox.
But they decided that their decision was. Instead of Paw Sox was always like the nickname because of the Pawtucket Red Sox.
Yeah.
So Worcester said, well, look, it's still a trademark. So we're going to say that our mascot is a big polar bear.
I get it. He has a paw. Get it? Huh?
Yeah.
Patrick Delahanty, who is a maniac, says the AA is the Portland Sea Dogs in Maine. Mm-hmm. All right.
Give some love to your AAA and AA teams.
Oh, absolutely.
And even your single A teams.
Yeah.
Because that's like if it ever bums you out that like you spent, oh my God, I spent $100 for a halfway decent seat to a major league game, and I'm being shuttled into this place to make sure that I can't be mixing with the hoity-toity, hoi-polloi, go to a minor league game. The concessions are cheap. The tickets, like for $50, you get amazing seats. And again, the level of play is just really, really great. Again, the Paw Sox moved out, I think, 2 years ago, but I've been missing them ever since.
Oh, it makes me sad. Also here, a fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers, even though he lives in Niner country, Mr. Alex Lindsay from officehours.global and 090.media. Hello, Alex.
Hey, I'm pretty excited about the whole quarterback thing in Pittsburgh. It's definitely become
who's your QB now?
We don't know. We don't know who the QB is.
Hey, we got one. You can have
Kenny Pickett.
We got this guy named Garoppolo. You want him?
No, we don't need him. We got three. We got three good quarterbacks and one that looks like he's.
We do too. We actually are going to have to cut one of the two backups, I think, and that would be a shame because they both looked pretty good. Anyway, NFL's coming. That's why we're talking about this and baseball. This is when baseball gets exciting too in the fall. But you know what's most exciting about September? September 7th.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the September issue of Vogue. Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. I'm a teen Vogue guy.
Sorry.
This is now, Mark Gurman says, no, really. This is it. This is not. This is a rumor, but I have it on very good authority. He's putting his money where his mouth is that, weirdly, this is the one that you actually think Jason said it could happen. Mm. It would be the Wednesday after Labor Day. It could happen. And it looks like it might.
Yeah, I didn't say it was going to be the best choice. I thought the following Tuesday, but they did. So 2016, I think, is when they did this last.
I remember that, yeah.
They didn't want to wait the extra week just because Labor Day was fairly, you know, it was at the point in the calendar where they really didn't want to put it off another week, Labor Day on the 5th. And so they just said, we'll just do it on the 7th. We'll give everybody that extra day and do it on the 7th. It's also suspicious, right? Because by doing it that way, it kind of implies that they're going to invite people somewhere. So, because otherwise you don't really, they could just do it on a Tuesday and it doesn't really matter. So it's possible, still out there as a possibility, is they might invite some press down to do the sort of like a version of what they did for WWDC. But definitely there's a precedent. They did it in 16 and it's not, you know, it was definitely a possibility. And so we're going to get a Wednesday Apple event the first week of September.
I think, didn't Gurman say it would be, the press would be invited?
He said it was a possibility, right? Which is him hedging a little bit.
He didn't say for sure.
I think Apple greatly benefits by having members of the press get to do their briefings in person and hold the products in their hands. And the moment they feel like it's safe enough to do that, which again, they had lots of rules for WWDC. We had to show a proof of vaccination and we had to take a test and we had to be masked and all of those things. But we were able to go into the briefing rooms and get our hands on the products. And that was good. So, and that benefits Apple. They want to make that happen because then the press is not just writing abstract stories about a product that's on video. They're talking about the products that they actually held in their hands. And that's better for everyone. So I think they're inclined to do that if they can get away with it.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't think that actually presenting live is necessary. And in fact, it slows it down. So it's for most of us watching doesn't it actually makes it worse.
Make it tighter.
But I think that make a show out of it. Just show us a video for an hour and a half. But I do think that having the press be able to play with so you still want to bring people to Apple Park. I think people, there's oftentimes people say, well, press won't come if it's not a live presentation. I'm like, press is coming because it's Apple Park and because you get to play with the gear. Like, whatever's on the screen or the stage
Don't need live. No one cares. That's about right. That. Yeah. You feel that way too, Jason? As somebody who goes to these things?
It's all stagecraft, and the fact is that 99.999% of the people who are watching this thing are not watching it in person. So I think the reason for Apple to do it at something like the Steve Jobs Theater and actually have a crowd there is for stagecraft. It's that they do like the live in front of an audience who can applaud and whoop and do all those reactions.
The applause is good,
announcements.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
So
but
I think in the long run... they bring in VIPs and Apple employees to do the applause.
Yeah, who's applauding?
Okay. And they stack the deck. They've been doing that for several years now, where they make sure that there are people. It's not just like all press. It's the press are in the back, and then Apple invites and Apple employees are in the front, and they're the ones who are doing the like aggressive cheering before the thing is even finished with the sentence, right? But I could see them seeing that as having value. And in the long run, it wouldn't surprise me if they do something that is a hybrid of what we've seen now and what we've seen before, which is way more produced videos, but maybe with like a few segments where, you know, Tim comes out and says, now we're going to show you this and runs a video. Yeah. And then some other Apple executive comes out and says, now we're going to show you this. He does a 2-minute spiel and then runs a video. But I think they probably, maybe not, but like there's probably value to be had in having the live before a studio audience aspect of it at some point. But it's certainly not necessary.
I think just introductions, like one or two, please, just 1 or 2 minutes of introductions and then going into a video would be fine. Like as a viewer, I don't really care, but I do think most likely this one will be outside again. I think that we're still a lot of there's a it, while COVID has not proven to be as lethal as it was before, every large group that I know of that keeps on getting together, people that I know, like they SIGGRAPH was just a couple weeks ago, and like a huge number of people got COVID.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So like pack a bunch of people together. So I think that Steve Jobs Theater is probably not
do
in
it
the
outside
cards for this
do
one.
It.
I think they'll do it outside.
That would be nice. The weather will still be nice in September. Yeah. In fact, that's another reason to hold it earlier in September. Better chance that it's going to be sunny.
And that Cafe Max location that they use for WWDC,
like
they did have it out on the grass, but it's so huge that you could do it, even if there was a threat of rain, you could just push everybody back about 40 feet, and everybody would be undercover.
Under shelter. Okay.
So it's I think in the long run, the question is in a year or two, do they try to bring people into the Steve Jobs Theater again? But in the short run, I think the real question is, are they going to try to get press down there to get their hands on it that day or that week at some point? And I think they want to. And WWDC, it actually worked fine. If you take the press component and not the developer component, it was a small group of press, and we were kind of led around, and we were led into very specific areas, and we had to be masked, and we were kind of brought in for our briefings and then sent away again. And it was manageable, and it was not a, you know, shoulder to shoulder kind of scrum inside. Other than when they, you know, there was that briefly, but it was a small group and then we were all masked. And so I think it's a good approach for them to take. And I kind of assume they will, because it benefits everybody to have people actually touch the products. It was, as you know,
completely agree.
And you all know this too, right? Like watching a video is not the same as getting your hands on it. It makes a real difference.
You come in there with a small list of questions that you know that you can solve just with a few minutes with a device. Like, I'm going to definitely have like my old iPad next to this new iPad so I can see if there's a change in the display quality. I am definitely going to want to see like how big the margins are by measurement, but does it feel like I've got a big desktop? Does it feel like wide margins? I mean, you don't have. Obviously, you're not going to get to be there with your screwdriver and your Pentalobe and your heat blankets to take it apart to see, okay, so what kind of GPU is it using on it right now? But there are some things that within the space of 5 minutes you can check out. And also, when you're trying to talk to somebody about the impressions that you got off this product, you like to have the authority of being able to say, hi, I read the press release and I saw the prepared video that Apple produced. And now here's my opinion. It would at least have to say, okay, well, actually, I only spent about 5 or 10 minutes with it, but here are the firsthand impressions that I got. This is not a review. That's going to have to wait for about a month. But at least here's what I thought was as I was holding this for the first time.
Yeah, how else do all the YouTubers get their first look videos up, right?
Well, exactly. And mobile devices are devices meant to be held, right? So holding an iPhone, looking at the different colors, holding a laptop like the M2 at WWDC, we got that M2 MacBook Air. And I got to pick it up and hold it and hold and look at the different colors and look at it in the light and see whether that midnight had blue in it or not. And like and the act of holding a laptop or an iPad or a phone makes a difference. It really does. Even if you don't get a chance to run tests and live with it, even a short amount of time, it can help. So it does benefit.
I do have to ask you this, though. Were they surreptitiously wiping it off after everybody held it?
Oh, not even surreptitiously, Leo. They just wipe. Look, you go to one of these hands-on areas and there will be an Apple Minder by every single product. There are ones roving, but there's also one for every product, and they have a cloth. Okay? Absolutely.
Micah has his Midnight Blue, and he showed it to me on Saturday. And it is disgusting. And Mike is a clean person. It's disgusting. The way that Midnight Blue picks up fingerprints actually turned me off that color.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, nobody used my fingerprints to verify me, but there you go. Grossed out, Leo.
It's my favorite color. By the way, we should mention that you have put the 6-color apple on top of the shiny Midnight Blue apple.
Yeah, you can get that as a decal on Etsy. It's great. It looks really pops.
I do that on all my Macs.
I mean, look, they wipe down everything no matter what. And they did that
anyway
before
because
COVID.
Because of COVID, yeah.
But the Midnight, I'm sure they're like, no, really wipe
it's,
that one down.
It's fingerprinty. And, you know, by the way, Micah says, and I'm sure you agree, he says, I'm in love with this laptop.
Worth it.
Yeah, worth it. Exactly. Since I can live with some fingerprints. Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
How do you put that,
and honestly,
put that on your
LinkedIn? Fine patina.
Oh, is that what it is? A patina?
Of smudges? Grease from your
grease,
hands.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And grease, yeah.
What they say on Antiques Roadshow, that's just good, honest wear.
Yikes. This is what Mark Gurman wrote in on the Power On. By the way, Mark was on Tech News Weekly on Thursday, so watch that. We were showing it a little bit before the show began. So he expounded upon this, but this is what he wrote in the Power On newsletter on the 21st. The event will be on the Wednesday after Labor Day, an atypical day for Apple product launches. It signals that the company wanted to leave that Tuesday free. Maybe Mark's too young to remember the fact that Apple doesn't like to do an event the day after a holiday because it makes people work over the weekend. But he says, why? Perhaps because press and other guests will need a travel day after the Monday holiday. The approach strongly suggests, so this is, you're right, speculation, not what he's heard, strongly suggests the company will host an in-person event on its Apple Park campus for the iPhone launch, similar to what it did for WWDC in June. The presentation itself, Alex will be happy to know, will still be delivered online, just as Apple has done with events throughout the pandemic. But the company may also show the video live to a crowd at its campus. This sounds to me like speculation as opposed to what he's
It also
heard.
Just takes the reason that most likely it'll still stay, you know, not without any presentation is the presentation is so costly when you do it at the level that Apple does it at, where, you know, there's so much gear, there's, you know, there's broadcast trucks and all kinds of other things that happen. You know, it's not like a little web. This is not a webcast. You know, it is a full on broadcast. It's bigger than most people's TV network shows. And so it becomes very expensive and very painful to do that. Whereas play video, you play, you know, it's relatively straightforward.
Yeah, and there's another factor that at least when they in the classical events that they used to do, it really was quite disruptive to the Apple campus, where it's not just okay, we can rent a catering truck, we'll rent this video truck, we'll rent this. A lot of people who work at Apple have to spend a couple of weeks and then the whole day. Like, oftentimes you'll find that you don't know who it is who's showing. You've asked a random question of because you just saw someone with an Apple logo T-shirt on, and it turns out that this person is actually an engineer who absolutely knows what they're doing. And you're thinking, why are you answering questions from me? You should be like developing the next piece of wizardry and wondery. But yeah, it can be very disruptive. So maybe this is another opportunity they're seeing that we can basically manage how much we're going to be sort of downsized in terms of our productivity and our time by holding these events, by doing it pre-taped and really controlling how many people we have on campus who are actually taking a look at this stuff.
But remember, this is right about the same time they're going to make everybody come back to campus. So everybody will be there.
And everybody's really on board for that. They couldn't be more enthusiastic.
Oh, they're so excited. Apparently there's a petition going around Apple saying, please don't make us come back to work.
I mean, this is relevant, but there's actually a registered outbreak of COVID on Google's LA campus.
Oh boy!
Not like, oh well, geez, everyone's here. They're taking a look at all the COVID numbers from all the different offices and all the different monitoring points throughout the city. And Google has been noted as, yeah, there is a certified outbreak on the LA campus, and that shows you that's not just people who want to stick to the, oh gosh, we've had this taste of wonderful work at home. And we want to continue. We don't see any reason to. A lot of people are like, look, I don't want to mess around with COVID. I've got a husband and I've got two kids that are all like introducing COVID randomness into the dice roll every single day. If I can stay home and keep myself a little bit safer and also keep my family safer, you have to give me a really good reason why I absolutely have to be in the office in order to approve a presentation that I could have just done by clicking an email.
The Apple Together Twitter account published the petition. Are you an office-based Apple employee? Are you less than thrilled with the return-to-office mandate? Sign the petition.
Better call Saul.
Yeah, it does sound like that, doesn't it? Let's tell Apple we demand flexible location, flexible work. It's funny, Fortune magazine says, Apple employees say they're doing great work at home. It's probably not true. thank you, Fortune, for that vote of confidence. So there's the petition.
We do need to say that they haven't responded to any requests on how many people actually signed the petition. You know, so
interesting.
We don't know how popular or how big of a deal this is for now. What I do know is I have a lot of people I know personally that already left when the first announcement was done, and just, you know, literally just said.
So fewer and fewer people are signing that petition.
Well, I think you're going to see more likely. You'll see more likely employees just leaving rather than signing it is a really great way to cap your career.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to be hard for them to sign it. But the problem is for Apple is that they will have a lot of people who, you know, may not quit immediately, but may, you know, they're going to prep their LinkedIn and they're going to start talking to other people. And again, we talked about this before. We've talked about every time it comes up that you don't want employees halfway in, halfway out. It's not a great way to run a company. And so I think that those folks may be, you know, more frustrated and more likely to go somewhere else. It's 3 days. It's one flexible. I think that what's going to happen is be really busy from Tuesday to Thursday, and then Fridays and whatever manager says weekend. You have to come in on Friday is going to be not popular. Yeah. You know? So I think that they'll have three solid days that are there, and that what it also makes it easier. If someone lives in Tahoe or has moved somewhere else, come down and, you know, they have a little apartment and they'll come and work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And the problem is the chances of them working very hard on the other days because they're bitter that they had to come down. You know, like you know, like it'll, you know, like, and so it, all of it creates kind of a, it's hard to tell because, I mean, there are some valid reasons that a company may want to maintain culture, maintain, there's a lot of conversations that happen at Apple that you can't necessarily, you don't want to necessarily do over video because someone could record it and someone could, you know, put it up. And so there are things that you want to look at and talk about that are more difficult, regardless of how effective the employees are more difficult to do online. Even if you have some kind of little watermark bouncing around or anything else, it's still difficult to have some of those conversations. And so I think that there are some valid reasons to bring people back in, but I think that they are going, any company that says people have to come back in is going to lose. The unfortunate thing is often lose some of their best people because they're the most mobile. They're the ones that can get a job, you know, anywhere. Yeah. It's hard to keep them.
As we mentioned last week, Apple says you have to come in Tuesday and Thursday and a third day determined by your boss. And as you're pointing out, any intelligent boss will make that day Wednesday.
Yeah. Like, I think it's just going to, I think they could have said all these other days. Maybe the team will get together and all decide they want Monday or something. I don't know. I mean, but I have a feeling that it's going to be pretty heavy Tuesday through Thursday.
Yeah. I love this. This is Tristan Beauvais writing at Fortune. Apple employees claim they're doing exceptional work remotely as Tim Cook orders them back. They're probably wrong.
Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?
I don't know how Tristan Beauvais would know that, but okay, fine.
I mean, you know, it's sure. I mean, I don't think it's a matter of whether they're being effective or not. I mean, I think that it's a matter of can they have all the conversations they need, and are there things that they believe are social? I don't think Apple's really trying to say you weren't getting work done and we want you to come back in so we can check on you. I think it's really more of a cultural / cross-pollination thing that they want to do. But I think that you don't get to Apple by being lazy.
Unfortunately, it's become now a power struggle between management and those employees who, whether explicitly or under the table, are not happy about it. And you don't, you know, I mean, I always say the best time to look for work is when you have a job. You don't want your employees with one foot out the door.
Well, especially from Apple. I mean, like, you know, that's a pretty great seal of approval. If you get through, if you get to work at Apple, it's usually a pretty, you know, you can get a lot of other jobs, especially if you're remotely. So it is going to be an interesting thing. They're going to force this. And then there's a lot of companies that are very aggressively going after Apple employees and other people who are saying you have to come back to work. Even like Google, Google and Facebook have location-based, you know, pay scales. And so if you're not coming back to the main Mountain View, they're going to pay you 25% less or 10% less or whatever. And I also know folks that have just, like, they got a 25% pay cut. They did the math and took another job that was about the same as that 25%. It was the same amount of money. It just wasn't working for Google anymore. they were just mad.
There is something great about saying, I work for Google or I work for Apple. That really, I know from people who do, that's a point of pride.
There's a great thing to have said it, at least.
Yeah. You
know, like that's the hard part.
Actually, isn't that real cred? I was to work for Google, but, you know, I decided to do my own thing. It's like even better.
But the easiest time to get a job is when you work for one of those companies.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's hard.
So I do feel like this might be intentionally or unintentionally a struggle. Remember, employees now are very much more empowered than ever before, and this might be a struggle between management and employees, a pure power struggle, saying, but whether it's the right thing to do or not. We're saying you come back, and you better come back.
Yeah, I mean, I think that again, the real power struggles is employee retention. I don't think you're going to see a bunch of big protests, and I don't think you're going to see a big petition that's signed by a lot of people because that's suicide from a career suicide. Like, as soon as you put your name down, there, you're not going to move up.
Yeah.
You might as well quit now. Yeah. And so I think that that's not going to really be like, we're not going to see some drama about it, but what we are going to see is employees leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, yeah. And I mean, let's see what it'll be like in 5 or 10 years where you've got the situation that, the, you know, you're going to see, like, it's this churning thing where you're going to get a key valued employee and they're going to say, I'm going to have to leave because I'm going to relocate. And they say, no, we'll let you work remotely. And so that person's gone. And that'll keep happening.
Yeah.
And then they'll lose other people who say, I want to relocate. And they'll say, or I want to be remote. And they'll be like, no, they'll lose them. And then 5 or 10 years pass. And either you suffer the brain drain and you feel really bad. Or I suppose you find out that you're so powerful that you can dictate terms and not miss a step. But I suspect that's not going to be the case, and it's going to be the latter. And I think what motivates a lot of the people who are doing these petitions and things is saying, Apple, don't learn this the hard way. Like, we all learned during the pandemic that we can do this job this way as it is. So maybe you should recalibrate your corporate culture. I think that's a little naive in the sense that you don't ever recalibrate a corporate culture overnight. It takes years and it takes the hard way to happen. And I think that will happen, or they'll have a brain drain and feel really bad.
San Francisco Chronicle is reporting 400 signatures, which is nothing. But you're right. It could be three times that who are thinking in their head. Okay, foot out door.
And it's not going to be about this one issue. I think that a lot of this investment is about, we want to keep the troops happy. We want them to believe that if they have an issue, we will discuss it. And once their voices are heard, we will not only nod and give you like a sticker saying, congratulations, we heard your stuff, but you have an ability to actually affect change, small and large, this company. Because resentments tend to build up, and that's, if you don't give in on things you could have easily give in on, in 2 or 3 years' time, now you've got a groundswell of support for unionizing, not just for the people who are working at the Apple store, but I'm talking about the people that are putting in big bucks and are realizing that, geez, could be it's true that some people above a certain pay grade, yes, they can get whatever they want, but once they get their screw you money, meaning that they know they can work whatever they want, or they have enough money saved up that it doesn't really matter where they work anymore, that's when altruism tends to, that's when you can afford altruism. When you're rich, you can afford to make the big grand gesture again and say, you know what, I know that I'm a highly paid engineer with 15 years worth of experience, but I'm going to throw my full support behind this unionization effort because, oh my God, this is terrible, and this is not the Apple that I grew up with, and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, and that's the big fear of every large tech company in the world today, that we just hope to God we don't have to submit to collective bargaining with our employees. We want to be able to push them around a little bit.
Well, and I have to admit that of the folks that I've known, you know, that at some of these companies, they're the complaint usually from the folks has not been that a company gets too rigid. It's that they're too soft and they allow people to do this. And they're like, we're just trying to get a job done. And these kids are all doing whatever. And so it's an interesting puzzle. It depends on how long you've been there and the old version versus the new. So these are all cultural issues, is that the older employees at a lot of these companies think that the company is coddling the kids way too much.
That's right.
You know,
very most important employees are saying, no, we want to come back. Don't let these kids get away with this. That may be.
And the reality is, going back to headquarters, it makes a big difference for those who are trying to move up the corporate ladder. And so if you don't have FaceTime, if you're working at home, if you enjoy the job that you have, you're in a good stead. If you think that you want to move up, everybody kind of assumes that moving up means being at Mountain View or Menlo Park or Cupertino. Yeah. And the reality is, it's just a lot slower if you're not there.
Is it related that Apple has canceled the contracts about of 100 recruiters, contract recruiters who handled recruiting? This is also from Mark Gurman.
I think that everybody's kind of bracing for what's going to be.
Just, you know, everybody's slowing hiring.
Hanging on. Yeah. Everyone's hanging on right now to see what happens next year. There's so much in this.
We are.
There's so many.
You know what?
Well, there's
we
so
are.
Many variables. You know, whether it's recession.
Lisa and I are having this conversation. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? I mean, that we are. Every business is doing this right now.
I mean,
what's going to
everybody's
happen next?
Hedging. And it's not just, I mean, the big thing, the you know, there's the recession, but that's the little problem. There's Taiwan.
Right.
That is what nobody knows what to do with. Like, if China does what Russia did in Ukraine, like, how are you going to be able to politically make phones? And we can see this in India right now with Apple's, like, ramping up, you
India
know,
and Vietnam. Yeah.
Vietnam. Yeah. Yeah.
And so trying to get out of that, you know, like, but and also, you know, they're all, most companies are looking for solutions that aren't in China, which is really, I think, we talked about this in previous weeks, but just really expensive for China for to make to not allay people's fears, you know, over something that I don't really know what they think they're going to get out of this.
So if the Apple event is 2 weeks from tomorrow, when will you get your invitation, Jason?
Well, they usually do it about a week in advance, right? So
next week.
I would say next Tuesday or Wednesday, there will probably be invitations.
Right after you would get a discount.
To press.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
he could drive.
Yeah, I feel for all of my colleagues in the press who have to fly to, and which is almost all of them, that have to fly to the Bay Area for these events, since I just get in the car and drive down 280,
you
know, right?
You can go over to Sausalito and get a little puddle jumper and.
Yeah, fly. That's what Elon Musk could do. Fly, my friend. Fly. It's only a nine-minute flight.
I'll
enjoy
it. Hop in the old Zeppelin and just float on down.
No, he probably asked for like $5 billion of taxpayer money to build a tunnel that only accepts Tesla cars.
Let's pour a tunnel underneath.
From Mill Valley. A tunnel from Mill Valley to
that's a good
man. Cupertino. That would be
let's
awesome.
Let's do it. Yeah, let's do
it. That's how you keep workers coming in. Give them a tunnel. This is your own private Apple tunnel. All right, let me take a little break. We have much more to talk about. I'm not going to spend time talking about what Apple might announce on September 7th. We've done that, and I'm seeing so many people saying, I've seen articles saying, well, you really, if you have an iPhone 13, you should get the 14, as if they know, like, we don't know. It could have a giant, you know, it could have an X-ray camera that lets you see through people's clothes. We don't know. So it's a little early to decide whether you're going to buy this or not. We will let you know September 8th. How about that? Or even the 7th. We will, of course, if Apple has an event at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, September 7th, Micah and I will come in here. And any of you guys who want to as well, it'll be the day after MacBreak Weekly. We'll cover that. What do we do? I guess we could put up, we'll push Windows Weekly back by half an hour. Floss Weekly might have to move forward or something. We'll figure that out. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at, I know they're good friends because they are sponsors, and all our sponsors are our dear friends, ZocDoc. Oh, I do like ZocDoc. Now is the time, right? Before you book any brunch, what do? You look at reviews, you go to Yelp, you pour over lists, what's the best place? Why don't you do the same thing when you're booking a doctor? Arguably, a doctor is more important than brunch. Is that even a case of contention? I don't think so. Well, with ZocDoc, you can pick a doctor based on real, verified patient reviews. You can find the doctor who's in your network, so insurance covers it, and in your neighborhood, so you don't have to bore a tunnel. Finding the right doctor is at least as important as finding the right plate of beds, Benedict. I think you would agree. ZocDoc is free, by the way. Free app. Shows you doctors who are patient-reviewed, take your insurance, and are available when you need them. There's nothing worse than finding a doctor. You know, my buddy says, oh, you should try this guy. And you call him and say, we're not taking new patients right now. Come on. On ZocDoc, you can find every specialist under the sun. And they are taking patients. Whether you're trying to straighten those teeth, fix an achy back, get that mole checked, or anything else, ZocDoc, Z-O-C-D-O-C, has you covered. They've got a great mobile app, very easy to use. Search, find, and book doctors. It'll just take a few taps. And it's really important, I think. You know, look, I don't buy anything without looking at the Amazon reviews. I think you need verified patient reviews before you trust a doctor. From real people who made real appointments. So that when you walk into that doctor's office, you're set to see someone in your network who's going to be the doctor you want. Go to ZocDoc.com, find the doctor that's right for you. Book an appointment in person or remotely. Yes, of course, they can do remote appointments that works for your schedule. Every month now, millions of people use ZocDoc. Every month, they're there whenever you need to find and book a quality doctor. Go to ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Please do that, by the way, so they know you saw it here. You can get the app right there for free. and start your search for a top-rated doctor today. Many available within 24 hours. ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. We thank ZocDoc so much for supporting MacBreak Weekly, and you are supporting us when you go to that website, ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. That's the important part. ZocDoc.com/MacBreak. Thank you, ZocDoc. ZocDoc. So we know, or at least we think we know, that Apple will not ship iPad OS 16 until the iPad comes out. iOS 16 seems pretty well baked. You're using, which beta are you using, Jason? 6?
Oh, well, who counts anymore? Yeah. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, it seems pretty well done. You know, yeah. Google did a funny thing. They, after their 6th beta of Android 13, they just pushed it out last week. Oh, everybody's got it. It was like, what? You're not going to wait for the phone? What? But that isn't as big an update, I think. And one of the challenging updates in the new iOS, and I think one of the reasons iPad OS is going to be delayed in another month, is Stage Manager. Apple's, this is again Mark Gurman, he's pretty much dominated the show so far. I'll find somebody else. Apple's new iPad multitasking system doesn't cut it. And I have to say, I've been using the public beta of iPad OS 16, and yeah, I'm close to turning it off. Are you leaving it on?
I mean, the beauty is you toggle it on and off, so you use
you
it
don't
when
have
you want to,
use to it. Yeah.
And when it makes sense and when it's not. Not, I'm using it. You know, it's getting better. It is a huge leap for them. I think it's really smart for them to put it off for a month because.
But is a month enough to make it better?
My understanding is that they are working, you know, very hard on stomping out a lot of bugs, and that every beta, you know, every beta is better and changing things, and they're trying to change things and fix things as they go, and that's hard, but they're not like confident that they got it right and it's all fine, right? Like, yeah, I think that there's a lot of hard work going in, and holding it for 16.1 basically before they do the release is probably a good idea, but I don't agree with Mark. I think that there's work to be done there, but I think Mark is, he's, you know, I don't know, he doesn't like it, and that's
I don't either.
Right,
but I'm with him. He says Stage Manager is convoluted and confusing. It's not about the bugs. It's about the design. It's about how it works. You get the sense, he writes, that Apple is trying to do something new and different, a multitasking solution that was nothing like what exists on the Mac today. He gives him kudos for trying, but he says it's kind of janky. I kind of agree. Andy, have you used it yet?
I've used it. I don't have it installed on my primary devices because I only have one Mac and one iPad that can do both of those things. So I've had to sort of like depend on the kindness of strangers. I thought it was intriguing. I'm not in the position yet to judge it because it's still in beta. I agree with Jason. I'm very, very happy that they decided to delay it rather than give us either a half of an experience or a full experience that is not fully baked yet. I think they did the same thing with continuity, didn't they? Where they said, okay, we thought we'd have this ready for the major release, but it's going to be, we're going to have that as an update a few months later. And as a result, I have a feature that I rely on every single day as opposed to something that I used a couple of times. It let me down or it wasn't good enough, and then I simply forgot about it. So, yeah, it's, and the other thing, like, I know that speaking as the person who declared the flat keyboard of the 2016 MacBook to be garbage that they should never put onto there, it's kind of, there are times when it's kind of okay to be divisive. It's okay to have, say, look, this is a big, big leap. We think that this is a big, important part of what the iPad has to be. When we're charging potentially $1,500 for people who want a professional-level iPad, we feel as though the productivity end of this, being able to juggle between multiple tasks and multiple apps, is not adequate to the potential of the hardware. We have to make this big leap forward. It's okay for them to say that, We really believe in this. We're not going to force you to use it if you don't want to use it. Like Jason said, you can turn it off if you hate it. That's fine. And then maybe after two more iterations in a couple of years, you'll turn it back on again and you'll find that they fixed everything you didn't like about it. So all I'm hoping for is that so long as they get the core verbs and nouns of this feature correct, you know, if it feels like that makes sense, that this is where we would be parking – active windows and active tasks that are still in process. The simple motion of here's how I'm going to switch between one view and another view. If they get that right, they can build up on it, and that's what I'm hoping that they're doing. And that's why what was the famous game developer's quote that a bad game is always bad. A late game stops being late as soon as you release it, so you may as well make it late and good.
Very few developers follow that mantra, by the way.
Yeah,
have you used it, Alex? Late, good, and fired.
No, I don't have anything to debate. I just don't have time to debate anything right now. Yeah. I need it to all work.
Yeah.
But I will say that I'm kind of like meh about the idea. Like, so it's not like I feel like I'm dying to upgrade so that I can get this to work. I mean, I'm kind of in the world of my iPad works great.
I was fairly happy with the idea that they'd make the iPad be more power. You know, you get all this power under the hood, make it more. Not more like a desktop, but more usable as your only computer. Yeah. But I have always, on both Mac and iPad, used workspaces, full screen and workspaces. And I'm very comfortable with switching that way. On the Mac even, you know, swiping it to the next one. And that works very well for me. So maybe I'm just not the market.
You're not the target audience because the iPad OS is basically a full screen, split screen kind of view. And what they're trying to do is say, what if you don't want that in a certain circumstance?
Right.
And my issue with Mark Gurman's take on this is that he seems to basically say, nope, next. And as Andy said, it's new. They're trying to do windowing on the iPad. There's no legacy of windowing on the iPad. Like Stage Manager on the Mac, you can use it or not, but like it kind of makes sense because it gets all of the windowing features that the Mac has had for decades. Whereas the iPad, they're also figuring that part out. I am using it right now using Universal Control attached to my Mac. When you're on a trackpad and a keyboard, it makes a lot of sense. If you put it in that case, if you attach it to an external monitor, there are lots of things they have to work on. The beauty of it is it's a mode. You can shut it off if you don't want to be in that mode. Yeah. I toggle between those modes because there are lots of apps that on my iPad that I would much rather. I spend huge amounts of time on my iPad, and often I want to be in full screen mode.
Right.
But every now and then, I want to have a Twitter window open and a chat window open at the same time. And you can do that now in a way that is it's new and it's different and it's an additive thing. Right? What they're not doing is saying forget the iPad. We're throwing that away.
Right.
And Stage Manager is the future. That's not what they're saying. They're saying we're going to add another mode for people who want that mode some or all of the time. And I think that it's got a lot of potential. I'm not saying it's all there, but I think it would be foolish to throw it away when they haven't. They're taking a big swing, and it is step one. And then presumably they will not abandon it, and will actually iterate on it the next couple of years.
Because
they
sometimes abandon
stuff.
And I think, you know, they take the chances with it where they took chances with spaces. They created spaces where you could jump from one monitor to another. And after 10 years, I still hate it. So I looked at this like, I wonder if this will be as good as spaces, which I just like. Yeah. But again, I
like the fact that it would be so easy for them to simply say, oh, so obviously we're going to do overlapping windows. Boom, done. So let an intern do it on his long weekend, and we got it. That doesn't make sense for a device that is so comprehensively multi-touch as an iPad. I've always said that I thought that Microsoft did a really good job of crafting a new iteration of Windows that makes sense when you have a desktop and you're just interacting via a mouse and a keyboard, and also makes sense when you have a tablet or a convertible. But that's for the iPad to simply say, we are going to introduce a conjecture that is 20, 30 years old at this point, as if it is as relevant today as it was on the Xerox Alto in the late 70s. I'm glad that they are really trying to think something forward. So again, I'm willing to wait for them to get this. If they started off, say, look, We like this idea. We like this mechanism. For now on, for the first iteration, it's going to be a really good app/task switcher, and we're going to be continuing to develop it over the next few years. Oh, and by the way, I was informed by a hopeful person on the line that it's Shigeru Miyamoto who had that line, the famous like and foundational Nintendo game developer who had that line of better be late and good than on time and always sucking.
Yeah, I think he actually did it. unlike most. I feel like the stage manager controls take up way too much space, especially in the iPad where space is at a premium. And it feels to me very much like, Apple's tried, you know, technologies in the past before to make it easier to multitask. What's that thing where you press F5 and the icons go shoot?
Mission control.
Does anybody, I'm sure there's a handful of people that think, oh my God, that's the best feature ever.
I use that all the time to show the desktop. You spread your fingers out and it shows you the desktop, or you do a swipe up and it shows you all your windows so you can find the one you want, even if it's hidden behind other things. This is the thing about all of these kinds of features, right? Is that no user interface nicety for window management or for multitasking is going to be used by 100% of the population. Everything is a little nation unto itself. It's 20% using this feature. And like, I would not be caught dead using full screen on the Mac. I hate it. But other people love it. And I don't use spaces because I don't like spaces, but I use those mission control gestures, right? And other people, Leo, are like, why would you ever do that? And what Apple is doing here, that's why I say, you know, Stage Manager is additive, right? It's like, I think Apple realizes we're not getting everybody with this. Let's try something else on the Mac. And also, this is going to be our take on this for the iPad. But remember, they're still letting you not use that mode if you want. You can do split view or full screen, and it works the same way as it always has. So I think that's the challenge is you can't view this as being, Apple has said, forget how you use the iPad. This is how you use it now. They're trying to add another mode. I think they're showing progress. I think it's way more usable than it was in beta 1. And we'll see where it goes. But it's not for everybody, and it's not going to be. I think it's best. The best place for this thing is on an external display. And how many people are going to use an external display with an iPad? And second best is in one of those keyboard and trackpad cases that they make. And how many people use that? It is a tiny fraction. I do, but most people don't.
Will you use it on your Mac?
As a pure touch? Jury's still out on that. I get what they're going for. I am fighting against decades of Mac history on that.
You don't
front,
even need it on your Mac, right?
Well, I mean, I have a 27-inch monitor, so it's not as much. But like on my MacBook Air, I'm interested in the idea of having separate sets that you can switch between, but they're never out of sight and out of mind. Yeah. I think that there's some possibilities there, but I mean, we'll see. I guess my point is just, it's not for everyone. It's not meant to be for everyone. And if it adds another little part of it, like all of these features that they keep adding are not for everybody. And maybe that's a failing of theirs, but maybe that's just the reality that we all use our computers in different ways.
I feel like this is just another mission control expose. They'll probably leave it in there. Some people, there's a number of people in our chats who love it, along with Jason, will use it. But I don't think it's the revolution in UI that I kind of was interested in, and they were pitching it as. I just don't think so. I think it's going to be a...
But I think Jason sort of side mentioned an interesting point that it's true that it's very, very useful for people who have an external monitor on external display on an iPad. But hey, how many people actually use that? I think this is a way of saying that maybe it's time that you should have a desk that has a display and a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse on it and a little tablet stand for your iPad. That once you realize that, gee, maybe I don't have to buy a $2,000, $1,500 laptop. Someone who wasn't going to buy that $2,000, $1,500 laptop anyway, but it will get them to be so in love with how much productivity they can get done with their $800 iPad that it adds value, and it means it's in addition to buying a new iPhone every 2 or 3 years and handing down the previous one to another person in the family, now that maybe that will bring iPads into that cycle as well.
And certainly I understand it's a choice that you don't have to make. It doesn't change anything, but Apple is devoting a lot of expertise, brain power, time promoting to this that they could have done something else with, you always have to choose what features we're going to spend time on. And I know I just can't. I'm not convinced this is the one.
What I will say though is you don't want to put out features and then not promote them because then no one ever uses them. So if you're gonna, the one thing Apple is pretty good at is not killing tons of things, and so they tend to put something out and put a lot of weight behind it because they're going to keep it for a while.
Yeah,
and so I think it makes sense for them to push hard. Sure. But I
look
do,
how long they kept widgets.
I'm not sold, but we'll see.
I mean, right?
Exactly.
I believe it. And Apple has a long and as does any tech company history of introducing stuff nobody was interested in. And they just kind of dribble along. The question really is only, is stage manager that, or is it a revolution in the way people use iPads?
We'll doesn't see. Have to be a revolution. So long as it, adds value, it'll justify the expense.
Yeah, there is a little portion of the iPad user base that is the people who want pro features from the iPad, and I'm one of them. And we have been complaining for a long time this not being there. This is for us, and it's not for everybody. But it's like part of me wants to say, "Hey, Leo." My turn. I want this.
It's my time. I want to use it in a pro way too, and I am using it as you are, as a second monitor on my Mac. It's still a little sticky to get the mouse over there and use it, but it's nice to be able to do that. I think that's a great use. And look, it's an M1. I got a 2 terabyte M version. Yeah. I was thinking this is going to be a pro device. Well,
let's see when they ship. So they're not going to ship it till October. Let's see where it is there, right? And see if you feel differently about it in a context where you're using it with an external pointing device. How are they doing?
Right.
And I believe that Apple thinks that this is a long game kind of thing, and that they're going to keep iterating on this. They better be, because if they ship what they've got with a few beta fixes and then abandon it, we all should complain about that, because it's a start, and a start means you keep going.
Right.
And Apple abandons so much of their technology after one iteration and doesn't look at it again for 3 years. And Stage Manager needs work, because the iPad still doesn't really click on a link to spawn a Safari window in Stage Manager.
We talked
right?
About
like
that.
Where does it open? Right. Nobody knows.
Nobody
like
knows.
It's just not logical yet. Yeah. They have to figure this stuff out.
I think it's also ugly. It's just the ugly blobs on the left of my window. I don't get it. It's just ugly. But that's...
You can move windows over there and hide it, and that's what I do. It's like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. Just leave... Over there?
Oh, I didn't know I could do that. Okay, that's good to know. So then then I don't have so many complaints about it taking up
so
much space.
Yeah, and then you can
space.
Swipe. You can, and then if you move your cursor all the way over to the left, it'll do a little reveal.
Oh, okay.
And that's I think it's a much better interface.
Much better.
That should probably be the default.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to use, especially on a small iPad display, you don't want to waste screen real estate on your little...
That's a big gutter.
Not to mention the fact that there's a dock at the bottom, and now there's this other dock at the side, which is a real mixed metaphor. Like, how many different... Can we put ones at the top and the bottom, too, and just work in the little postage stamp in the middle? Like, it's too many things. So having it auto-show and auto-hide is actually... I think there's a keyboard command to do it.
Oh.
I know there is on the Mac. I don't know if there is on the iPad.
Okay, I'll have to take a look at that. So maybe I'm just holding it wrong. That's possible.
It could happen. It could happen.
There is a big update, which, of course, we should have led with, but by now, everybody who watches this show has already done it for iPad, iPadOS, and macOS 15.6.1. It is very important. It solves an issue in WebKit, two vulnerabilities in WebKit that were 0 days actively being exploited. Apple said the WebKit bug could be exploited if a vulnerable device accessed or processed maliciously crafted web content. So, you know, like, do you use, you go to any websites on your machine? Oh, you're vulnerable. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a, you know, hacker website. It could be a website that's been compromised, right? It could lead to the three worst words in the computing industry: arbitrary code execution. The second bug allows a malicious application to execute execute arbitrary code with kernel privileges. So the two flaws are believed to be related, and you could see how you could chain one to the other. So you go to a bad website, they then put an app on your system, which then gives them kernel privileges, and you're in bad shape. Nation-state spyware, ring a bell? That's who so far has used this. So Apple rushed to put out the fix, and you should rush to install it.
Yeah. Anytime Apple comes out with updates to literally everything that has a clock chip inside it, oh dear, that was a bad weekend for a lot of people in Cupertino, and a bad weekend for anybody who hasn't patched that yet. So yeah, don't be the one person who keeps dismissing the prompt like day after day after day for 3 weeks. It's like, yeah, maybe I will take a half hour break to update.
iPod Touch is vulnerable.
Yes.
6S and later on the phone, iPad Air 2 and later, 5th generation iPad and later, iPad Mini 4 and later, iPad Touch, 7th generation, and all iPad Pro models are affected. And, of course, Monterey. So your Mac should also get updated. Tell your friends who don't listen to this show. First of all, they should be listening. Second of all, they should do that patch. I don't know if this is going to conflict, actually, with September 7th. Tim Cook will be speaking at the Code Conference, which is 6, 7, and 8 of next month. So maybe Tim will be there on the 8th. Also, and this will be very interesting, Johnny Ive and Lorene Powell Jobs. So they're going to have to, I don't know. Boy, it'd be interesting if they're all three on stage. I doubt that's the case. Kara Swisher, of course, will be running the interrogation. I could totally see Tim Cook going the day after the Apple event, right? To promote it. Sundar Pichai from Alphabet. Andy Jassy, CEO of Amazon. Evan Spiegel. This apparently is the place to go. Mark Cuban, Gavin Newsom, the governor, Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, and The Verge's editor-in-chief Nilay Patel, because The Verge Vox puts it on their parent company. Casey Newton will also be speaking, which is cool.
It's important to have events like these because it's one of the rare events where the presence of this CEO is not the reason why this event exists, where it's not like they are so, it's so important for this conference that this one person come and give a keynote that, you know, that they're not going to be challenged. They're not going to be put in any sort of an awkward situation. Obviously it's not as though they're going to be bringing up like embarrassing high school yearbook pictures of anybody, but it is a place where one of the rare places where maybe Tim Cook is going to be asked about, look, what happens with Taiwan? Like, at what point are you close to? Do you have an exit plan for? What do you do if absolutely it's even impossible to do business with China anymore? And he can't just simply give like the pat answer and then move on to. But the haptic touch on the brand new Mac Pro is, you know,
you guys are scaring me. China's not going to invade Taiwan.
It's a problem if China does it in the next 5 years.
Yeah,
like that's the problem. I mean, but
it's
so
nuclear.
Are they going to do it?
War.
Are they going to do it in the next 6 months? Maybe not. But you know, China only has at this point. China has a limited amount of time to do what they're doing. They're running out of oxygen. You know, from a population perspective,
Taiwan's not going to solve that.
No, it's not. But if they want to make the move, they won't have. They need to make it sooner than later. That's what a lot of folks think anyway. So that they, you know, that they,
well,
they can't
the
wait
party
for
Congress
another decade
is October.
They'll be irrelevant.
She is doing stuff to apparently burnish his reputation ahead of the party Congress. Seems like that would be a suicide mission.
I mean, flying over, the problem is that flying jets or shooting missiles over top of Taiwan basically started the sand, right? Like, I mean, everybody's now trying to figure out how they diversify from China, you know, and it's, you know, it's just seen. And what, of course, made this way worse is that everything was theoretical until Ukraine. So the lesson
China took from Russia invading Ukraine was, oh, we can get away with this?
No. But I think that the thing is that they, you know, when we send people over and then they start firing missiles over top of the island, you know, it has everyone go, well, this would be a trillion-dollar problem right now.
Well, it would be a huge problem for all of tech.
But tech is now, I mean, anybody who is anyone is trying to figure out how to not be in China. Like, that is the big, like, now it's all like, how do we get all of our stuff, or how do we get to a point where we can do some of our work? Like, Apple is doing better because Apple is diversifying away from hardware. So if something happened, they could delay things or put things off or whatever. They can't stop, but they, you know, could, well, they'd still have revenue, right? But there's a lot of companies that don't. And we've already seen what happens in the supply chain when China slows down. And so, but everyone's trying to.
Yeah, to me, that was the real warning, right? Like, look what happens when they shut down Shanghai. You can't make MacBooks anymore.
But what happens when it's politically impossible to do work there? Like, if they go into Taiwan, I mean, consumers are going to be pretty upset if you can leave your factories open in China. And you can try to explain it away and say,
oh, no, it's not going to happen. The U.S. will immediately issue sanctions.
Yeah.
And none of that stuff will be allowed into the U.S.
And so that's going to cause a huge.
It shuts that off like the water tap.
And so the thing is these companies are, you know, now they're trying to get all these, you know,
well,
but it'll
blame
take
them for
them.
Doing it's that. Not, they should have done that years ago, frankly.
Absolutely. They should have. No, I've never gone in. So anyway, so the issue right now, though, is that it you couldn't respond right now. My guess is because it's happened slowly, a decade from now, it won't matter what China does because the companies are all going to be gone. Right. Like they're, you know, they'll still be there, but they're going to have ways to do this without them. And that's not, that wasn't tactically a great move by China to broadcast so far.
I have bit of real-time follow-up, by the way. Kara Swisher actually tweeted, because this is her last Code conference.
Her last
one. They are doing a session with Tim Cook, Johnny Ive, and Laureen Powell Jobs to talk about the impact of Steve Jobs.
The three of them.
That is the session. The three of them.
Wow. Oh, that will be awesome. Who knew him
best to discuss his lasting impact for Kara's last. Because famously, Steve Jobs went many times. I was there in the audience for a few of those. Like, many times with Bill Gates by himself to do the Code conference with Walt and Kara.
Yep.
So Kara's sort of, for her validation, victory. She is going to bring them back to talk about Steve. That will be something to see.
Boy, nice.
Yep.
That just shows you the power of Kara Swisher. Holy cow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
And she's retiring after this year. She says future resident of Hawaii. So that will be something to see. Johnny, Tim, and Laureen talking about Steve.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but that was
the
clarification we needed about what was going on.
And I have to think that if Apple's event is September 7th, this event will be September 8th. I would presume, I don't know. Get on. You know what? I'd rather be at the Beverly Hilton for that than the Apple campus.
And if it's pre-taped, it doesn't really matter. They don't even necessarily need Tim there, or Tim could be there.
It could be that afternoon, right
LA,
afterwards.
And then fly up, or he could fly down, and
that's
it's
true.
Not a big deal if all he's doing is you know, saying hello to the crowd, or even not present, right? Like, he said hello to the crowd at WWDC, but that was mostly for the developers. Tim doesn't even need to be there if they just usher us in to watch a video and then go, you're right, like Tim doesn't need to be there for that. So I wouldn't worry about it if I were him.
Amazing. That'll be fascinating. Okay. Thank you for updating. You've probably all seen the story. We'll talk about it in just a second. Is it worth using a VPN on iOS? Maybe not. But first, a word from 8Sleep. We love our 8Sleep Pod Pro cover. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Good sleep is nature's gentle nurse, the ultimate game changer. And the 8Sleep Pod is the ultimate sleep machine. Consistent sleep, good sleep can reduce the likelihood of serious health issues, including risk for heart disease. It can lower your blood pressure. It can reduce the risk of Alzheimer's. And this is an epidemic of poor sleep. More than 30% of Americans struggle with sleep. One of the main causes, especially right now when it's hot out, hot night, keeping you sweating in bed. We never have that problem at home because we use our 8Sleep Pod. It is amazing. It's not just something that can heat you up. It's something that can cool you down. The pod cover, which we've added to our mattress because we love our mattress. They sell a mattress as well. You could choose. We added the pod cover to our mattress, and it can go as low as 55 degrees or as hot as 110 degrees. You program it. Most people, and this is certainly what I do, like it warm when I get in bed and slip my feet under the covers. It's toasty. It's comfy. And then it cools off as I go to deeper and deeper sleep, and that's actually what your body wants. So you really increase the quality and the time spent in that deep sleep. And then I have it go up a little bit in the morning to wake me up. There's even a little vibration so you can have a kind of silent alarm if you want to wake you up. I like having it just warm up because I wake up naturally that way and it's great. 8Sleep is the only sleep technology that dynamically cools and heats each side of the bed. So Lisa has a wholly different plan than I do. But it maintains the optimal sleep temperature for us both. And it doesn't just take, you know, our instructions. It also checks the temperature of the room. So if it's really hot, it'll cool you down a little bit more. If it's really cool, we haven't had this for a year, so we had it through last winter. It was awesome to be warm in the winter, cool in the summer. According to clinical data, 8Sleep users experience up to 19% increase in recovery, up to 32% improvement in sleep quality, up to 34% more deep sleep. We got ours a long time ago because Kevin Rose was singing its praises. And then Kevin and Amy Webb were on a twit together. Amy got hers and she loves it. So I said, well, we have, honey, we got to get one of these. And I have to say, I put it on myself. Yes, you probably heard me talk about how I put it on upside down at first because I didn't watch the video, dummy. I'm one of those guys that goes, I'm not going to read the instructions. I just, it snaps right on. It's easy. And then I realized I did it wrong. It's okay. Put it back. Put it in the right. Started it up. It automatically adjusts. The sleep doctor will actually watch you. Well, that's creepy. Not watch you sleep, but it'll observe your sleep habits and adjust the temperature to get optimal sleep. And it really, really works. And I tell you, I feel so much better. We have the Pod 2 cover. They just put out the new Pod 3 cover, which has even more accurate sleep and health tracking, double the amount of sensors. It is now the best sleep experience on Earth. We're thinking of upgrading, but because we are just all in. We love our 8 Sleep Pod. It's not magic, but it sure feels like it. Go to 8sleep.com/MacBreak. Start sleeping cool this summer. You'll be toasty warm this winter. You'll also save $150 a checkout on the Pod. 8 Sleep currently ships within the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and select countries in the EU and Australia. So they've really opened it up. If you've been hearing me talk about this for the last, 8 months, now you can get it. 8sleep.com/MacBreak. EIGHT. 8sleep.com/MacBreak. Wouldn't you like a better night's sleep? Who wouldn't? And this one really works. This is technology at play. They do a great job. 8sleep.com/MacBreak. Thank you, 8sleep, for supporting MacBreak Weekly. You support us by using that address. So then you go, hey, these guys at MacBreak, they really work. And then they will continue to support the show. So please, I beg of you. Ars Technica, Kevin Purdy, iOS VPNs have leaked traffic for years. Now, what is the problem? Well, when you turn on a VPN on a device, normally all the connections to the outside world would be shut down and then reopened under the VPN so that all the traffic out of the phone was protected by the VPN. A security researcher says that Apple's iOS devices don't do this. Michael Horowitz says that the problem is that sessions and connections established before the VPN is activated do not terminate. And they continue on, sometimes for a long time. Data leaves the iOS device outside the VPN tunnel. This is not a classic DNS leak. It's a data leak. He confirmed this using multiple types of VPN and software for multiple VPN providers. So it's not really an issue with the VPN you're using. It's the issue with the iPhone. Proton had reported this earlier with iOS 13. Ours added an update from Proton founder and CEO Andy Yen. The fact is, quote, he said, the fact is this is still an issue. Is disappointing to say the least. We first notified Apple privately of this issue 2 years ago. Apple declined to fix it. That's why we disclosed the vulnerability to protect the public. Millions of people's security is in Apple's hands. They are the only ones who can fix the issue. So there is a workaround, apparently, which is to turn the VPN on, then to turn on airplane mode briefly, then turn it off again. By turning on the airplane mode, you'll force all the connections to disconnect. They'll reconnect under the VPN next time around. That, at least I've been told, works. I haven't tested it. So something that... This is from Proton. They said it's almost effective as manually closing connections when you start a VPN. Use that airplane mode. But we cannot guarantee this 100%. All right. So what do you think? Go ahead, Andy.
That's just that it's creepy as hell because you expect to see that icon in the menu bar at okay, I've got VPN going. That's great. I can trust that I'm not going to think about this again. The worst, I think, part of what makes this so bad is that it is a very complicated problem. It's not as simple as, it's indicating a VPN when VPN connection tunnel has not been secured at all. It is a set of circumstances where some of your data, unbeknownst to you, might be observable, and it just brings us all the way back to square one.
Apple says they have fixed this in 2019, but Horowitz's research is current.
Yeah, they added something to an API that blocks, it apparently knocks out all of the connections when you do this. And apparently that's been available to, but it's not on by default, but developers can turn it on. I'm unclear whether that's what Horowitz is referring to when he says that even with that stuff leaks, that would be a bug. But I think the bigger question is, why is that a default off feature of the API that you need to turn on? And the larger issue is why this is going on. I have a theory. My theory is that VPNs that completely leak or completely block all the current connections had some deleterious effects on Apple's own sync services on the iPhone, and that they didn't like it. And so they said, well, we'll let those ones continue until they're done, and then they can go inside the VPN. Something like that is my guess, is that they did it, and they're like, oh, we can't have that. That hurts the user experience in some way. And and the people on their security team did not walk up to them and say, no. You don't understand. VPNs are VPNs. We can't. I know it's going to hurt, but they're the ones flipping the switch. We've got to let them do it. But I don't have an explanation for the fact that this is apparently a feature you can turn on, but that Horowitz still claims that it doesn't actually help.
Even when it's turned on?
It's a mystery.
So even when you turn it on, he's saying that it doesn't help? Or is it?
It's unclear, because I don't know if I've seen him directly address that. Apple has said there is this thing that you can turn on that basically is the, do you want to cut all current connections when I establish a VPN, that is supposed to solve this issue. But the story I read, I think, suggested that a lot of VPN providers aren't using that feature. So the issue is still out there.
9to5Mac has a couple of points on this. One, they say Proton says it is only partially effective. They tried the claimed fix and they found it only partially effective. Amplify says Apple's fix is unstable. When a customer asked them about it, they said, during research and development, we tried to enable this setting, and it instantly caused VPN connection instability. Therefore, we never released it to customers.
And that's why it's off by default.
And that's why it's off. Like that's why it's not on, and that's why they're putting it off, is because it's causing stability issues. And the funny thing is that I actually found this to be really eye-opening for me, that you could just go to airplane mode, because the way I was instructed to use VPNs was turn the phone off, turn it back on, turn the VPN on, and then start using it. Every time I've used VPN, that's how I've done
that's
it.
That's certainly good, but the idea any that connections I can only have established to do with the airport in that brief period between the time you turn the phone back on and you turn on the VPN will remain in the clear. That's the issue. So the airplane mode, because you can have the VPN running,
it's way better.
It would work better, and it's also a lot faster. Yeah.
It is. It's just that, I've been doing that for years. Anytime I watch
you've been smart.
I mean, I didn't know. I just followed instructions that I was given. Yeah. like I didn't know that there was.
Well, and I should point out, probably this isn't a big issue, because people who use VPNs are not trying to hide from Apple in most cases. And most of these services, I suspect, are Apple's background services. They're trying to protect, their email or protect their, I would imagine certainly the airplane mode fix would be good enough for, even if it doesn't affect all of Apple's services, for most people. I mean, why do you use a VPN? Is it to hide everything from Apple? Yeah, well, maybe not. I mean, after all, if you're logged into Apple, it doesn't matter if you're using a VPN. It's going to go through the VPN tunnel, and Apple say, oh, hi, there's your stuff. Thank you.
It's mostly new web pages and logins and that type of thing.
And for you, I imagine, and for some, you're traveling in more hostile territories, and that then becomes a concern, because you don't know, what's being leaked about you.
I mean, it's automatically a concern, because you don't have VPN stuff. You're used to the idea of, okay, if my VPN is on, everything that's communicating off of my device across the internet is through a tunnel. There should never be an asterisk next to that to say, except for in these rare cases that we feel it's okay for something to exist outside the VPN, as a blah, 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 blah. Hold up. What? And so if Apple feels as though they fixed the bug, they're going to have to at least explain if VPN service on iOS is working exactly as Apple intends it to. Now they need to come out with an explanation of what VPN is supposed to represent on an iPhone or on an iPad, and basically make sure that everybody knows exactly how that stuff works, or else it's just kind of sketchy.
Well, you've been warned. That's all I can say. And we'll see. Maybe this is something that iOS 16 will address. I don't know. Here's some good news. If you do have an M2 MacBook Air, it runs Windows 11 faster than a Dell laptop. Under emulation. So we've been talking about this on Windows Weekly. People are very impressed with how... Of course, there's no more any way to install Windows in Boot Camp. Boot Camp's gone. But Parallels offers a version that will run on the Apple Silicon that will let you... You have to run Windows on ARM, which is a special version of Windows designed for the ARM chip. Microsoft offers it, but apparently it's still in beta because it seems to be Microsoft has a deal with Qualcomm that it won't run officially on any non-Qualcomm chips. So Max Tech, the YouTuber, actually did some testing in Geekbench 5 using Parallels 18 with Windows on ARM. The laptop kind of clobbered the Dell XPS Plus, 1681 on a single-core test compared to 1182 for the Dell. Multi-core 7260 versus 5476. That's like 25% faster. Actually, in one case, it's almost 50% faster.
Doesn't it make you proud to be a Mac user when someone's doing something naughty, something that Apple did not plan for, did not intend, as like even and this has not been optimized in any way, certainly. You're saying, oh, you know what? I'm suddenly 17 years old again, and say, oh, IBM sucks. Mac rules forever. Like, you know, I've grown up and I've become a less polarized man. But sometimes there's that little voice in the back of my head that just takes such satisfaction that, yeah, an Apple Mac runs Windows much, much better than.
When you plug in the Windows machine, it runs better, at least in one test. And that makes sense because now the power envelope can go higher. So the Dell will run faster. It also helps those of us who really hate it when they say, well, I'm not buying a Mac. It's too expensive. Because the MacBook Air was $1,600 while the slower XPS Plus was $1,849. So nice test, Max Tech. You're making us proud. Well done.
I appreciate how Microsoft makes it so easy to get Windows on ARM using their early release Explorer or whatever it is program. Because like this could be difficult. This could be like, oh no, we got to deal with Qualcomm. It's only pre-installed. You can't really get it. You got to know somebody. You got to lift. And they're like, nah, you just sign up and get it. It's
nudge,
fine.
nudge, wink, wink. Yeah.
And back at Macworld, almost 10 years ago, probably we did a cover that was the world's best PC.
Yeah.
It's a Mac.
Yeah.
And it's I figured with the leaving Intel behind, that would no longer be the case. It's nice to know it's still true. Still got it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And it's unknown how that's pure speculation that it was an exclusive deal with Qualcomm.
Yeah.
But it's unknown how long that deal will continue to run. But hey, no problem. You just go to, download Windows on ARM and you can download an official copy.
It's amazing. Run it in Parallels. And all the Mac virtualization programs support it too,
right.
Of course.
Yeah.
And so everybody's just like, it's just wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And here we are running Windows on ARM on a Mac.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons it runs so well is it isn't really running an emulation, is it? It's an ARM Mac, the Apple Silicon's
ARM chip. It's virtualization.
Right.
And then there is, right, Windows, Microsoft has some emulation in it. That's actually an interesting point, too, is that any emulation being done is being done by Microsoft's emulation engine, which would make sense,
Hyper-V,
right? Because they're the ones who control that. So
right.
Even on that, you would be getting the best in class emulation of Intel processing, which is inside Windows.
Yep.
And how does it handle, like, really graphics intensive processes, in that kind of emulation?
I think
that's
you
a
should
very
do a YouTube
than
video. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, my understanding is that Windows on ARM is best used with stuff that's compiled for ARM, and I'm unclear what happens when you run into something that's made to be on Intel.
It's one thing to be on ARM, but it's another thing to have like all the way that they the M1 and M2 manage, GPUs and CPUs and how they work. It's not as explicit as it has been before. So it just seems like things that were that wanted to lean heavily on the GPU might not know where to go.
Apple. Go ahead.
No, maybe that's what, one of the things they've optimized a little bit, at least, yeah. is understanding how to, you know, Parallels may have figured out a way to tie that, so it just makes the call right. as needed.
I think in the long run, I'm very excited. I really think that Apple Silicon's GPUs are going to come along, and hand in hand with Metal, we're going to see a very yeah. nice combination there. We'll see.
Yeah.
Xiaolong Zhang, a former Apple employee, has pled guilty to stealing trade secrets from Apple. He was arrested at the San Jose airport in July 2018, planning to fly to China. He had been working in Apple's Project Titan. He was accused of downloading Apple internal files, a 25-page document, including engineering schematics of a circuit board for an autonomous vehicle. He also is accused of taking reference manuals and PDFs describing Apple prototypes and prototype requirements, presumably to bring them to China. Apple caught him,
yep.
and he's facing as much as 10 years in prison and $250,000 fine after pleading guilty. He'll be sentenced in November.
Yeah, this has been promoted by the Biden administration and other government organizations as this is one of the reasons why America considers China to be a huge threat, not necessarily the military threat, but the fact that they are really making a great effort to put people into research positions, put people into industrial positions to get as many secrets as possible and bring them back to China. And so this is why the CHIPS Act has a section all about it, about saying, look, if you're going to be doing research under government grants, you're going to have to go through training on how to protect your research.
Yep.
If you're going to be doing research for the government, you are not going to be taking a job or taking grant money from China, because it's just going to wind up in the hands of people that maybe we may or may not want it to be in the hands of. And it's, and the industrial stuff, it's not their property. They shouldn't be able to do this. So it's absolutely no surprise.
Apple first suspected Zhang of stealing trade secrets after he took paternity leave and went to China. When he came back, he turned in his resignation, saying he wanted to move back home to take care of his mother. He planned to work for X Motors, a leading Chinese electric vehicle company. At that point, they cut his access to the network and, of course, just went, because they have a lot of logging, and went back and looked at what he had downloaded and what he had access to. One of the things that we've learned from this in the charging documents from back in 2018 was that Apple had 5,000, this is people in the Project Titan, 5,000 disclosed employees, which means they knew about the project, and 2,700 core employees with access to project materials and databases. Doesn't mean they're all working on it, but I would guess the vast majority of those 2,700 people were working Project Titan 4 years ago in 2018.
Yeah. And who knows what they were actually working on, and if the project didn't take a big, big swerve in a different direction since then. So maybe the stuff they got is valuable to a certain extent, but it's not necessarily valuable in terms of what Apple's developing now.
It's not a unique case. Another former Apple employee, Ji Jong Chen, is also facing charges, allegedly stealing trade secrets from the electric car division in 2019. In that case, Chen, a U.S. citizen, also planned to travel to China. He has not pled guilty. He's going to go to court. Trial date has not been set. So, yeah, I wonder how systematic this is. Sounds like it might be. We've got at least two spies.
Absolutely.
In there. Yeah.
And yet the Apple Store employee named Sam Sung was an absolute peach. He's perfectly fine. He's even auctioning his name badge for charity. So, you just can't predict these things.
So you think Sam Sung, that was his real name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like he was an actual employee of Apple.
Yeah.
Of an Apple Store.
And here's the auction for his he's even autographed his T-shirt. And there's his employee badge and his business card for the Buchanan Street Apple Store in Glasgow. Sam Sung. I guess
when he applied, if they thought that this has got to be, we're going to have to do a background check because this could be an alias. It could be we're being punked here.
Current bid, 1,152. Is that Chinese dollars? I don't know what the C is. What's the C? Whose currency is
Canadian?
That? Canadian. Maybe it's Canadian.
Nah.
I don't know.
Well, it's, I, I love this idea. But you could get a note from him and be a Samsung note. You could he could fold
there
his,
he is.
His card, and then it would be Samsung's Galaxy Fold, right?
He can give you access to his webcam, and it could be Samsung Watch. Yeah. There's no end to this.
Oh, and then he's in Vancouver. I thought it was Glasgow. Yeah. So then he was a specialist in Vancouver.
All right, Canadian dollars.
$2,653 US. But oh, good. Look, he's donating a significant
giant check. Awesome.
A it's giant hilarious. Check.
Love
he's
it.
Giving a big check. He's a classic guy. Here he is on TV. Wow. He's making the most out of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. And you can follow him, Sam the Scott, on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok for updates. So, yeah, in 2010, he worked in Glasgow, and then in 2012, he moved to Vancouver. Hmm. 2013, I left Apple to pursue a career in recruitment and headhunting. In 2014, I found one of those business cards in a book. I must have used it as a bookmark and auctioned it off for charity. $2,500 US donated to Children's Wish, BC, and Yukon. Then a family member found one of his business cards from the original store, and it's in excellent condition. I'm assuming he's talking like that. I don't know. And of course, he's going to put up some NFTs on OpenSea if you can't afford the. Of course, he is.
Love it.
Hey, we mentioned Alex the passing of John Foster some time ago. Yeah. And I didn't have access to this video, but one of our viewers posted this on the Twit forums, a little memory. Did you see it?
Yeah.
A little memory of John Foster. Let me play it now.
Hey, everybody, but especially Alex and Leo. I was sad to hear that John had passed away. I was a member of Pixel Core back in the day, about 12 years ago. And we had some interactions there. But my favorite moment with him was one week when he announced on Twitter that he was going to be guesting on Mac Break. And he asked, you know, if there was anything people wanted discussed on the show. And so I sent him a note saying, no, but make sure Alex says break time is over, because Alex had been saying that when he was guest hosting, and Leo was still saying another Mac Break is broke, which was the dumbest. Sorry, Leo. Anyway,
I don't think you're very sorry at all.
The end of the show, and Alex started to say one, started to say the other, was about to bail, and John said, no, 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 say it right. And Alex said, break time is over. And aww. I was like, yes.
Aww.
And ever since then, that's been the closing line for the show. So that's my John moment and my moment of internet fame with Mac Break Weekly.
Isn't that great?
hope you guys are having a good day.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Thank you. His handle on the forums is i4detail. He's a former writer for Macworld Canada. Editor of the smallest newspaper ever in Northern Canada, but I don't know his real name. But anyway, thank you for that video. It was great. And do you remember that, Alex?
Yeah, I do actually. Step it up. So we'll go back and find.
I had forgotten that we used to say Mac Break is broke. And I agree, that was pretty dumb.
There was a little back and forth for a while. Anytime I showed up, I was like, Mac Break is, you know, what's over. Go back, get back to work.
Get back to work, because break time is over.
Yeah, so.
All right. Well, that's why.
That was just a simulation, people. It's not the end of the episode.
No,
just
yes.
A simulation.
Oh, thank you, God.
Much more quickly than usual.
Don't tune it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. Oh.
We still have picks. We still have the picks.
Still got a lot more. Okay. Anybody watch House of the Dragon?
Yep.
Jason, you watched it? Andy?
No spoilers. I only saw the first 5 minutes.
First 5 minutes? How could you stop?
Because it was on my phone. I was like,
yeah,
I
don't watch
it
on your phone.
As it was made for the phone.
I got five minutes in, and I'm like, I don't want to watch this on the phone.
Watching the Quibi version? What the hell? This is the new Game of Thrones. There was even an article in the New York Times saying, don't watch it. Season 8 was so awful. Don't watch it.
I do think I have to think about it for a little while. I'm still a little bitter about that.
But apparently,
season 6 through 8,
10 million people took it seriously. And watched it, and so
it basically got the same ratings as Game of Thrones did when it premiered. But you know, it went up from there. So we'll see how this
one
goes.
Biggest start according to HBO for a series in HBO's history. It started a little slow. I think by the end, I was pretty stoked to watch more.
Yeah, I was definitely on the fence about it. I watched all of Game of Thrones, and I even did a episode-by-episode podcast for, like, the last 5 seasons or something like that. So I retired from that, just watched as a regular civilian, which was great, to watch a TV show without taking notes was amazing. And by the end, I was like, all right, I will watch more, where I was not entirely convinced of that going in. And just for the record, the people who ran the original Game of Thrones show are not involved, and you can use that as a positive or a negative, but I think a lot of people right now would say positive that those guys are not involved.
Yeah, I thought they were very good showrunners.
With George R. R. Martin being involved, too.
It's based on his prequel book, right? He wrote it.
Exactly. He wrote basically like a history book of the backstory for Game of Thrones, and they're using some of that as the material, like the details, and then they have to pour in a lot of detail, right? Because it's really more about the high level stuff that George R. R. Martin did. But they have a lot of latitude, a lot more latitude actually than the Game of Thrones producers did in terms of what happens, because there's not a lot of detail in those books.
Until season 6.
Yeah, until they ran out of books. That's true.
Yeah, they ran out of books, and then we realized they didn't actually read the books.
Yeah.
No idea.
I have to say, I loved Game of Thrones, but yeah, that was kind of a weak season.
It was great. Thing. And season 6, you're like, oh, and then season 7, you're like, oh, this isn't, but I can't stop now.
Right.
And then season 8 was like, what did they just
what
do?
Have they
you know,
done?
And the rumor is that they, you know, the showrunners were getting ready to go do something else. They didn't want to do, HBO wanted to do another 2 more years after after the one, and they just wanted to close it up. They just were like, let's wrap this up and move on to the next thing.
HBO has
they didn't have any books to live up to, right?
HBO has 5 other Thrones spinoffs in development. Mm-hmm. 5.
Right.
Mm-hmm. 5.
So the good news is they really have to make this one work, and so they're going to spend all the monies.
Those dragons are
going to look amazing.
It would be malpractice not to have that stuff ready to go, right? Because a franchise, if people are still receptive to this show, they're going to have some other ones out there. I'll just throw out there is one of the things in development is based on a series of novellas by George R. R. Martin. It's the Dunk and Egg stories, which is like Dunk is an accidental hedge knight, and Egg is this kid who has a very interesting Targaryen-related backstory. I just read those novellas. They're really great. And the guy who's developing that show is Stephen Conrad, who did Patriot. And if you haven't seen Patriot, it's on Amazon Prime Video. It is so great, starring Michael Dorman. It is one of the underappreciated drama series of the last couple of decades. It's weird and funny, but also it's about spies. It's about sad spies. That's what Patriot is about. It's about sad people who are spies. And I try to imagine Stephen Conrad writing a Game of Thrones spinoff. And then I think about this weird buddy, almost buddy adventure comedy with Dunk and Egg. And I think, like, I really want to see that show. So I hope it does well, because I want to see that other spinoff, because that sounds really weird and potentially great.
Well, the boy, I've learned a lot now about the Song of Ice and Fire.
Let me give you the TV. Did you like that, Leo? Did you like that moment where they say they called it
the Song of Ice and Fire? Oh, I love that moment. Like, that was hysterical.
That's when you elbow the person next to you on the sofa and said, said the name
I
of the
did.
Series.
I did.
That was
I
it. I recognize like the Song of Ice and Fire. That's the Song of Ice and Fire. Yeah.
It is kind of weird, though, that they've got these 5, you say they've got these 5 other series. Meanwhile, like, they've axed the Batgirl movie. They've axed all animation, so the new Batman animated series is gone. The new Bugs Bunny animated
series. Did you see John Oliver's piece this weekend? Of course, he's on HBO, so he's kissing, he's biting the hand that feeds it. He called HBO basically a tax dodge.
Well, it's all, I mean, right, that like the Batgirl thing, they were making original movies for HBO, and the new management doesn't want to make original movies just for streaming. And the animation is perplexing, especially since they claim that they're like super into Matt Reeves and his Batman movie, and they want to make another one, but Matt Reeves was working on this animated series and they killed it. Although potentially they might shop that around to some other outlet, but it is perplexing. And yes, at least one of these Game of Thrones spinoffs that's in development is animated. So I think the answer is it's like, how how many bets do they want to place on various franchises inside and outside of the HBO universe? Because also keep in mind, I think they're trying to not mess with HBO proper because they feel like that's the crown jewel. And some of the DC projects are a little bit outside of HBO proper and True. Maybe more fair game. But who knows? They're stumbling all over everything over there.
And DC has not been had the strongest track record, and so I think that if they really didn't think that the new movie was going to go well, I think they're thinking more of the brand because they did spend $90 million on it. So they didn't. I don't think it was flippant. I think they're looking at the overall brand and decided that whatever happened there. I mean, we may never know what happened to that movie, but you know, sometimes they just turn into train wrecks. There's too many requests, too many changes, too many things. And instead of just putting it out, they decided to bury it. Someone burying a $90 million movie is a big bury. Something small.
What I heard was that it was made for streaming. So they didn't have some big action set pieces that you would need to make it be theatrical, and that its death was partially because they said, look, analyze this movie. Can we make it feel like a theatrical release, and how much would that cost? And they got back an answer they didn't like, and then they said, well, just forget it, because they seemed to just be really committed to not releasing it as a streaming thing. And the knock against it, somebody said, is it felt a little bit like a pilot episode for a CW series. And that's really mean to say that, but I mean, there's probably some truth in that. It was basically a made-for-TV movie, and they decided they didn't want to play that game anymore.
The reality is, $90 million is a lot for a TV movie, but not very much for an action film. You know,
yeah, it's a tweener, right? And the current management didn't spend the $90 million, right? It was the previous management and right. The new management, and they basically said, look, this isn't usable right now based on your strategy, and so we're going to need more money. And they're like, stop right there. You're not getting more money. And they killed it. So it's too bad. I think it's too bad. But it's really like it fell right in between the strategies that the new management has. And so they just decided to pull the plug.
Yeah. And the old Hollywood saying is that the only thing worse than a failure is losing money on a failure that was someone else's idea. So even if it had succeeded, you wouldn't be able to take the credit for it. So you're just a dummy who instead of blaming the previous administration and saying, yeah, we don't want to put bad money after good. So, yeah.
In the TV realm, Apple has failed in its bid for Big Ten streaming. Not going to make me cry, but, you know, they're trying to get more. We talked about it last week. Lots more sports.
I'm not sure how much of a player they were going to be in that. I mean, it sounds like the Big Ten ultimately just decided to go with their streaming strategy as one of their broadcast partners. So it's Peacock. I'm not sure. The rumors weren't really heavy about Apple and Amazon sniffing around the Big Ten. I think the feeling was that was probably going to go. Because remember, Fox is the primary rights holder there. And then Fox was actually in the room negotiating with NBC and CBS. And in the end, I think that's what won out is they kept the, you know, the legacy broadcast networks happy and threw the streaming games on the on Peacock, which is, you know, NBC's streaming service. So I'm not sure. I think that there are other rights coming up. ESPN's negotiating with the Pac-12, and they've got the ACC. And the Apple and Amazon are heavily rumored for those, although it'll probably all just go to ESPN and ESPN Plus. But Apple, regardless of this deal and the other college football deals, like, make no mistake, Apple is going to write some big checks. We've talked about it here in the last few months. There are going to be a lot of big checks written for sports because Apple thinks live sports is a way to get people to sample Apple stuff who haven't sampled it up to now.
The Sunday ticket's going to be really interesting to see where that goes.
That's the one to watch. Yeah,
that's the one. If that turns over, it's going to be a big deal. If it doesn't, it'll, you know, still MLS really gives Apple a chance to innovate. Yeah. You know, over the next couple of years, I bet you the first year will be basic. let's make it work. But then after that, within 3 or 4 years, I think we're going to start seeing different level of coverage, AR, VR interaction. You know, it gives them a place to do it because they don't have to deal with traditional broadcast. They don't have to deal with all the same commercial breaks and the same process. They can do whatever they want. And so it's a really interesting thing to see what they do with that kind of open access.
Apple's expanding its self-service repair program to the M1 MacBook Air and all three M1 MacBook Pro models. Some kind of limited repair types, audio board, battery for the Air, bottom case display, keycaps, logic board, speaker, top case, Touch ID board, trackpad, fans for MacBook Pro, MagSafe for MacBook Pro, antenna modules. Actually, I guess that's a lot of
it. Those are
the things.
It's not a bad. It's not a bad selection, and it is just on the M2 or the M1 laptops, not the M2, just the M1 Air and the 3 Pros right now, although Apple said that there will be more, including desktops, coming down the road. The big thing about this, I think, is that it's not as intense to fix a Mac as it is to fix an iPhone. You don't necessarily have to rent the giant case that's got the machine that takes the screen off, right, to do this. You may be able, if you've got iFixit tools, you may be able to do these repairs yourself. And if that's the case, with stuff you've already got, and then at that point you're just buying the official Apple replacement part and installing it yourself.
So you could buy the part standalone. You don't have to buy the toolkit.
The tools are not mandatory. Okay. They'll sell them to you, or they'll rent them to you, or you can just have your own tools. There are, I guess, in different repairs, there are a couple places where there are specialized tools, but there are also a bunch of different repairs that aren't.
Right.
And yeah, I think this is going to be like, if you need to do a battery replacement, you can choose to get the cheaper battery replacement that is from a third party. Or you could say, you know, I'm just going to get the Apple battery replacement. Yeah. I'm going to pay them and
get
do it
the
myself.
Real battery.
And you'll be able to do that. But this is, I've seen this story spun as been like Apple reluctantly does this. It's like, I don't know. I think this is, I'm surprised they went out with the iPhone because the iPhone repairs are so complicated. Whereas these Mac repairs, you know, everything's a little bit bigger and a little bit easier to get into. And I think it's great. The idea that Apple will give you their manual and say, here's how you fix that I/O board that's bad. Or, you know, whatever it is, I love it. It's great. And if, I should say, one of the interesting details here is some of these items are very expensive, like a logic board replacement for a MacBook Pro 10 core is like $1,800, $1,900. But for the expensive items, Apple will reimburse you for your return of the faulty one. So, you know, you pay $1,900 for that logic board, but the one you send back is worth $1,500, and so it's a $400 repair. So you get some of your money back for the expensive repairs.
That's
too.
Not
so
bad at
it's
all.
Not it's never going to be the best deal, but it is like the official Apple sanctioned deal, and I think that's a good thing.
Right.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people who don't have easy access to an Apple store for people that it's a 3 hour or 4 hour drive. They'd much rather just wrestle with it at home. I just wish that they would go all the way and make it super super easy for third party repair shops and not necessarily be fully certified by Apple, but to simply be able to say, look, I know that the problem is with the motherboard because I see this smoking crater in the middle of this motherboard. So I'm guessing that that's the thing that needs to be swapped out. Just sell me a motherboard. This person does not have the skills or the interest in swapping it out themselves, but I know what I'm doing. So just please release the right hardware to me. I will send you the broken motherboard back. I think that's what a lot of people would like to have happen. But it's nice. It's nice that they're doing something better than nothing. And this is literally better than nothing.
Mr. Jason Snell found a little bit of a bug in, what is this, iOS?
This is macOS Ventura system settings app.
Which they've replaced the control panel now with, or the preference panes now with this system settings app.
So this is, you know, I was looking in the Finder extensions, which is in a weird place, and I scrolled through the list, and, you know, there's things from Automator and things from Shortcuts, and they're all different sizes, which is really ugly, and I thought, wow, this size disparity needs to be fixed. And then I scrolled a little further, and there was a spotlight icon the size of your head. And then just move along, and then there's other icons. And I thought, something is wrong here.
Little bug.
Something's gone wrong.
Little tiny bug. And somebody said we're going to need a bigger modal dialog.
I'm sure they'll fix it, but it shows you that like, I think this may be an area of interface that nobody has ventured into at Apple and noticed. I don't know why the spotlight icon is 8 times the size of anything else in that screen. It's a 880. Something 800 times the size, but you know that whole app is a mess right now, and I hope they, you know, they like we were talking about Stage Manager, they've got an extra month to fix things in the settings app, but I didn't, you know, it's just really disappointing because the system preferences app so desperately needed to be replaced by something else, and it's really because it was really hurting and not working very well, and was really based on like the screen sizes of Macs in 2001. And they give us the settings app, and it's such it's so dispiriting because it doesn't work right, and it still doesn't take advantage of the screen sizes we have today. It's really modal. It's got hierarchies that are invisible. It's a mess. So they've got a little time to fix it, but not much time.
Not much, because if you're going to put it out in October, you got to have you got to have it finalized by September, early September, I would think. So, yeah.
I'm surprised at you, Jason. Though you're a tech blogger. This is your crystal clear opportunity to say I've confirmed Apple working on 278-inch MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't forget that this is Icon Gate, right? This is why are the icons all different sizes? Mm. Why is there a large icon? Icon Gate. Mm. macOS Ventura doesn't care about your icon sizes. Well, I'm sure somebody will write that
story. I'm going to guess there was a missing asset, and it just picked the next one up. It was a little bigger than they expected.
It could be. And I went in there because I very specifically, like, this is one of those weird areas where you've got stuff that you used to be able to plug into the system from Automator. And these are Automator actions, and I use those to automate all sorts of stuff in the Finder. And those are these little icons that you set. And they changed it a little bit when the Touch Bar came out, but basically they're the same. And then there's shortcuts you can put in there now. And they share that space. And that's great. Except the icons are, like, these are black and white, and these are color, and these are big, and these are little, and they're all kind of mishmashed together. And there's nobody, apparently, to say, well, wait a second. This looks terrible. We need to fix this.
That's where you'd get a call by Steve Jobs in the middle of the night saying,
have you seen the size of the spotlight icon?
What is going on? Let's take a break, and then, if you will, your picks of the week coming up next. Our show today brought to you by those great folks at New Relic. I know a lot of devs. I'm kind of their mascot, right? Devs are great. I mean, they're curious. The first to explore new tech. They dig into documentation. They actually read documentation. They want to know not only how things work, but why. And I think that's the group, that's the people who turn to New Relic. New Relic gives you all the data about what you build, the information you need, and shows what's really happening in your software life cycle. It's a single place to see the data from your entire stack. It really saves you time. You don't have to look into a bunch of different tools and connect them manually. You get 16 tools all within one. And boy, are these powerful, from application monitoring to full stack, and it pinpoints issues down to the line of code. So you know why the problems are happening, and you can resolve them quickly. They are a favorite of dev and ops teams at DoorDash and GitHub and Epic Games. More than 14,000 companies use New Relic to debug and improve their software. When teams come together around data, New Relic allows you to triage problems, be confident in the decisions you're making, and reduce the time needed to implement resolutions using data, not opinions. And isn't it what we really want is data? Use the data platform made for the curious. Right now you get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data per month, free forever. Yes, no credit card required. Just go to newrelic.com/MacBreak, newrelic.com/MacBreak. Get the whole platform, all 16 tools, and 100 gigabytes of data a month, free forever. No credit card needed. NewRelic.com/MacBreak. Thank you, New Relic, for supporting MacBreak Weekly. You support us when you go to that address, NewRelic.com/MacBreak. Alex Lindsay, pick of the week time.
I'm using my pick of the week. So we talked about it a little bit before the show, but I have a... I got this from Courtney Gooden. Courtney Gooden is in Office Hours, and he had this mic that he was using, and I was like, oh, it really sounds nice, but Courtney's voice is so good that I was like, it may not be the mic. So anyway, but I've been heavily testing mics. I've got 8 or 9 of them floating around right now. I'm trying to find good mics to send out to people for some of our podcasts. So I saw his. I was like, well, he sounds pretty good. It's only $200. I'll give it a shot. So this is the Stellar X2. So you can decide, if you're listening to the show, whether you like it or not. There's no processing. So there's no compression, no anything else.
I think it sounds pretty good. I'll be honest with you.
It sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a large-ish diaphragm mic. It is... It's designed to sound a lot like an or a U-87, you know, the Neumann U-87. And so that's kind of what they were shooting for, I believe. They don't say that, of course, on their website because that would get them in trouble. but it's a Stellar X2. It's $200. They have a new one that's an X3 that now that I saw it, I was like, why didn't I just get that one? But this is a really good one. But I will say for $199 is probably the best sounding mic that I've gotten.
Yeah, for that price. Wow. Yeah.
And a lot of the folks decided it sounded better than my Neumann, which you I think you said at the beginning of the show.
It does sound better. I felt like the Neumann was a little tummy. My voice. It sounds better, yeah.
Yeah, so this is it's really good value. It's, you know, people always ask, well, is this the mic I should get? Well, I was like, it depends. You know,
everybody should get a different mic. Yeah, yeah. Well,
you know, that's one of the things I did is I started getting all these mics because I was like, I want to be in the same place testing a whole bunch of different mics and figure out, like, how does my voice sound with these mics in this environment? Like, I opened this up. I was traveling on Thursday and Friday, so I was jumping into office hours from a hotel that looked really good on hotels.com. And when I got there, there was no carpets, no nothing. Like, it was very hard. And I was like, well, this is going to not be great audio. And when I started listening to it, I could hear the whole room with this mic.
Because that's the problem more with sensitive. Condenser mics, yeah.
But then I switched over to a dynamic, and it was fine, right? You know, and I also hung I also hung the comforter over the TV, which turns out to be a great way to stop audio from bouncing off of the wall. And but anyway, the point is that it is, you know, in a quiet environment where you have a little bit of something to suck up some of the reflections. I think it's a really, really good mic I think it's the best mic I've had for the price, you know, for one.
Yeah, no kidding. For $200. Yeah. Stellar X2 large capsule condenser microphone. TechZoneAudioProducts.com.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of cool. You can use it and we can hear it and we know. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, you know, you can decide. Well, if you listen to the last week's show, you'll be like, well, that you can decide whether that sounded better or worse than this one. Yeah, exactly.
And that one last week was a little more expensive.
Three times as much.
Thank you, Alex. Andy Anatko, pick of the week.
It's time for me to start that long haul process of upgrading all of my chargers once again, because they keep getting better after every 3 or 4 years. And this is the first GaN charger that I've ever bought. And it really put me on the bandwagon for them. So this is Anker's Nano 2 735 65 watt charger.
That's a 65 watt charger. It's tiny.
That's a 65. Yeah, and it does. It's like, I like Anker products. They're very, very reliable for me.
Too.
And also, I like the way this is really set up, where if I'm coming home on the commuter rail, I can use both of these USB-C ports to power up and charge my iPad and my phone. I'll still have a USB-style port that I can use to charge a third thing, no problem. And it will, of course, split those 65 watts above the across those three devices, but it means I can actually be using these three devices while I'm charging these three devices. But if I only have, if I want to put all the entire 65 watts on one device, if I want to fast charge my iPad, want to fast charge my my MacBook, I can just use one of these ports and intelligently put these together. And it's nice and tiny. It's really compact. It has those folding plug ports, and it's not super cheap. It's like $59. But once the thing is, it's hard to put a price on having one less piece of junk inside your laptop bag. And for me, if I'm spending a couple days in New York, 2 or 3 days in New York, I will have a second charger or maybe even a third charger to make sure that I can get everything recharged overnight at my hotel room or wherever I'm staying. Whereas this will do the job for me. Again, if you don't want fast charging, you can use all three ports and it'll happen just fine. And it will still do the thing where, oh, cram, I only have 18% left on my phone and I have to leave for the airport in an hour. It'll force feed that phone pretty nicely. And again, it's Anker, so it's reliable, it's good, it's well built, it feels like a real thing. And I bought this first one sort of tentatively because I'm like, okay, well, does it really work well? Because I'm disappointed. I kind of almost have to get a Sharpie and take all of my older chargers and write down what doesn't work well about them. Like, okay, now it will kind of fast charge, but you have to use only this port. And it only has three. But if you don't use the right one, it won't fast charge and you'll be very, very sad in an hour and a half. This other one there's the wrong kinds of ports and it's only 20 watt or 25 watts. I'm still going to keep them. I'm probably just going to keep them like nearby, like in the living room nearby, in different places where some of my devices land up. But I'm going to start the slow slog of making sure there's one of these for like my one day in Boston laptop bag, another one of these in my 2 days in New York laptop bag, and a third one in the bag that I take when I'm going to be gone for 3 or 4 or 5 days. Because if there isn't one in each bag, at some point I will steal from one bag to power something or charge something. I'll forget to put it back. And once again, I'll be like on the Amtrak train, very sad because my bag doesn't have a charger in it. So well worth a while. I think this is going to be worth my $60 times 3 or 4.
Yeah, very compact. We actually have the Nano 1.
Yeah.
Quite a few of these. It's actually labeled Nano 1, so it's like they knew they were going to do a Nano 2, I guess. But this is also 65 watt. I love these GaN chargers because they're so compact and they don't get as hot. You could charge either one of these devices, could charge your MacBook at full speed. That's pretty good.
Yep.
Thank you, Anchor. And I see they have a coupon code for $14 off right now at the website. Yep. So this might be the time.
I bought the first one at full price from Amazon, and now, fortunately, this show has saved me $14 because maybe I'll just buy both of them right now.
Now's the time. Thank you, Andy. Mr. Jason Snell, pick of the week.
Yeah, it's a two for this time because about a month ago, I recommended Swift Bar, which is a great app that lets you put anything in your menu bar. And I got some feedback where it's like, well, it's very technical and it's got lots of shell scripts and stuff like that. And then you got to go download it from some website that's got it's a GitHub page. Okay, there's an app called One Thing. It's free.
This
it's
is the
on
opposite.
The App Store.
This is the complete opposite.
It does literally the same thing as Swift Bar, but it's a single instance. It lives in your menu bar. It's free. And then you can use a shell script or something if you want to feed it. You can drag text to it, and the text just goes in your menu bar. Or, this is the good one, you can run a shortcut and have the shortcut set the menu bar to be whatever you want it to be. It's an item in your menu bar that can contain data. It could be a pep talk. It could be anything you want. And my friend Joe Steele told me about this because he was reluctant to have the whole Swift Bar experience. And this is a lot less nerdy. And I think it's a good free app that will let you put anything you want in your menu bar. What Joe did is he used shortcuts and HomeKit to get his weather station out in his backyard to display the current temperature at his house in his menu bar, all using just shortcuts and One Thing without any Python scripting or shell scripting or anything like that. Just his HomeKit data and One Thing. The only problem with that is, what do you do to get it to update regularly? And when Joe wrote about this, a reader wrote in and said, oh, I've got the app for you. And it is very cool. It is called Shortery. Shortery is the feature that totally should be in shortcuts on the Mac and isn't yet, which is it's a free app with in-app purchase, and it lets you do automation for shortcuts on the Mac. So based on different changes on your Mac, or just based on time, run this shortcut every 20 minutes. So you could set it up to check your weather in your backyard and update One Thing every 15 minutes, every 20 minutes, for as long as your Mac is up and running. But you can do lots of other things. And this is a thing that there's some automation. It's limited, but there's some automation for shortcuts on iOS. But on macOS, there's nothing. And I think that's what we call in the biz a third-party opportunity. And here it is, Shortery. And it is free. And then if you want the extra kind of bonus automation level, there's a one-time in-app purchase of, I think it's like $3 or $4. So put those two things together. You can automate anything out of shortcuts and put it in your menu bar.
Very nice. Shortery. That's from LGER. CKENS.DE forget it. Anyway, just search for Shortery Mac OS. I think you'll probably find it a little bit faster doing that. And then, of course, the one thing
the
is
too.
From
both of
Cindra. So forget it.
Listen, they're in the App Store. Search for One Thing
store.
And Shortery in the
Go
App Store.
In the App Store.
Yep.
Sandra Sohus. Don't know what country that person's from either. Thank you, Jason Snell. You catch Jason at work and play at sixcolors.com. He is prolific, to say the least.
He's going to be busy soon. Getting busy.
Getting busy. You also can listen to his podcasts. He's got a whole podcast page there and many, many podcasts. But actually, if you just go to sixsellers.com, when they come out, he makes that a post there. So it's an easy way to keep up with what Jason's up to. Thank you, Jason. It's a real pleasure.
Thank you, Leo.
Andy Inaco, when are you going to be on GBH next?
Got a little bit of a summer break. I'm off this week, and then the whole show is dark next week and repeats for their summer break. But first Friday after Labor Day, I'll probably be talking about the iPhone news and other things from the Apple event. Go to WGBHnews.org, and you can actually see the last time I was on just last week and see all their previous things they've done.
And, of course, Inaco.com, which will soon be blossoming into a
new host next flower. Week.
Yep. Oh yeah, nice. Inatko. Alex Lindsay is the maitre d' at Office Hours at officehours.global. You do amazing things over there.
We had such a great morning this morning.
Synthesizers.
So Carl Asmussen is one of our members from Adelaide, Australia, and so he gave us a half an hour overview of how a synthesizer works. He had an analog synthesizer with a camera over top of it, and he's just walking through, like, this is how the, you know, oscillator works. This is the LFO, you know, LFO, the it had the, you know, the amp, the, you know, all the thing, how the envelopes feed into it. And he gave us this kind of great overview. It's the second hour, because the first hour is always just us answering
questions.
Yeah,
here's the synthesizer stuff,
but so he's kind of, so it's like a half an hour of a breakdown, and we're getting ready to do...
It doesn't matter when I press the button.
And so we're getting ready to do workshops, you know, in after hours, our other, the part that runs 21 hours a day instead of the 2 hours that Office Hours runs. So he was showing that off. And then, you know, then when we started answering questions, I realized, you know, we have Courtney Gooden, we were talking about earlier with the mic, who's done, you know, he goes, I used the synthesizer for the effects for Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. So he's talking about that. And he's out of L.A. And then Nick Batt is, he's from DNA. They're most known for Tom's Diner, you know, Suzanne Vega's, you know, kind of dance version of Tom's Diner. Yeah. So Nick Batt, who was part of DNA that did that, as well as working with Goldfrapp and others, he's on there answering questions about this stuff. And then Carl was answering it from answering questions from Australia. So I was like, we got three continents like sitting there answering people's questions about synthesizers, and we're gonna be doing, you know, it was crazy. I was just like, it was just a crazy experience, and it got really geeky. I mean, people kept on throwing questions about synthesizers. I was like, oh, they're gonna stump these guys, not a one. Like, these guys dug in, like, no, well, actually, you know, and they got in these deep philosophical answers about synthesizers I'd never heard of before. So it was about why this one's good and bad and what it does and where it came from and why it was there. And so it's just we're going to do this once a month. It's just synthesizers on our audio days, which are typically Tuesdays. So anyway, a lot of fun.
If you're interested, officehours.global, you can get an invitation to join the Zoom conference live or watch it after the fact. There's YouTube as well. Yeah. officehours.global. And if you want to hire Alex to do his thing, 090.media is the place. Thank you, all three of you, for joining us. We do Mac Break weekly on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch us do it live. Be the very first person to hear Mac Break Weekly in your friend group by going to live.twit.tv. You could chat live at irc.twit.tv. Of course, club members can also chat with us in the Club Twit Discord. That's a fabulous place to hang out. Thursday, we're going to be doing Stacy's Book Club, and I am rushing through Clara and the Sun because I want to be there for that 9 a.m. Pacific on Thursday. This is for club members. We do a lot of interesting things in the club. We have shows that appear only in the club, like Hands on Mac with Micah Sargent, Hands on Windows with Paul Thurrott, The Ultimate Linux Show with Jonathan Bennett. We also do the Giz Fizz with Dick DiBartolo. Those all appear on the Twit Plus feed. Also, as a member, you get ad-free versions of all the shows. I think this is a lot of content for $7 a month. And that $7 a month is very helpful to us, both in developing new shows and in just supporting the network as a whole. It really helps. So if you're not yet a member of Club Twit, I urge you, I invite you, I beseech you, visit twit.tv/clubtwit. Ad-free versions of the shows and more for just $7 a month. There's a yearly plan. There's also a enterprise plan if you want to do that. We have gift certificates, that kind of thing. Club Twit, twit.tv/clubtwit. After the show's over, we do also have ad-supported versions for you for free at our website, twit.tv/mbw. You can also watch on YouTube. There's a dedicated YouTube channel, the Mac Break Weekly. There's also, of course, the option to subscribe in your favorite podcast player, because it is a podcast. We'd love it if you'd subscribe. That way you get it automatically as soon as it's available. Plus, subscribers get a chance to do something really important. Give us a 5-star review, please, on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks to everybody for being here. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you all next week. And now, another Mac Break is broke. No? Oh, get back to work.
Get back to work.
Because break time is over. It's over. Break time's over. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Alex.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time.